Britain has a new party leader. America sees trouble in old media. A breakdown of order in Afghanistan, a breakdown of sanity in Congress, and a breakdown of accountability in the church. It's Monday, September 27, 2010. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. Over the weekend, Britain's Labour Party elected a new party leader. The young man is Ed Miliband. The man he defeated was his own brother, just a few years older. Ed Miliband was born in 1969. He is known as a man of the left, and this appears to be a decisive move of Britain's Labour Party in a more liberal direction, a direction that repudiates, at least in part, the New Labour, which had been so closely associated with former British Prime Minister Tony Blair and his successor Gordon Brown. This race for the party leadership in Great Britain was something new in British politics. Never before had there been two brothers who had run against each other for this kind of party office. Never before had two figures so personally as well as politically related vied against one another, each running with a different sense of trajectory and leadership for their party. All of this points to very significant changes in British politics in both the present and the future. The current British government, headed by Prime Minister David Cameron, is a coalition government. Cameron represents the leadership of the Tory Party, the British Conservatives, and they are now in a coalition government with the Liberal Party, the first time that has happened in decades. But with the election of Ed Miliband as the head of the Labour Party, there are signs that there is a very significant shift to the left. Now, Americans should recognize that after World War II, Britain took a significant shift towards socialism. Along with many other European countries, Britain turned toward the formation of a welfare state. But by the late 1970s, it was clear that Britain could not afford the bills for the welfare state that it had created. Along came Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher in the late 1970s and well into the 80s, who gave leadership to a new and very vigorous form of economic thinking that was clearly conservative. What you had in New Labour, with Tony Blair at the head following two successive Tory governments, was a corrective and a response. But New Labour was a repudiation of Old Labour, which was so tied to the labour unions and to a socialist form of government. Now, the energy behind the candidacy of Ed Miliband was the energy to repudiate New Labour and return to Old Labour. In other words, to return to a welfare state, closer relationships with the British trade unions, and a significant shift in general to the left. What makes the timing of this all the more interesting is that if Britain was in economic trouble in the late 1970s, and it certainly was, it is in far greater economic trouble now. And it'll be very difficult to see how a turn to socialism can be accomplished given the economic constraints of the present day. Well, if Britain is looking to new party leadership in the United States, there are big questions about old media. The headlines over the weekend really tell the story. First of all, Blockbuster announced a Chapter 11 bankruptcy. In announcing this bankruptcy, Blockbuster, a paradigm of the video craze, was trying to settle at least $1 billion in debt and to try to come up with a business plan that can take it into the future. In recent days, Blockbuster has become a symbol of the struggles of old media. Now, when you think about old media and new media, we have to keep in mind that Blockbuster was a great phenomenon of the 80s and the 90s. It appeared to be new, but it was really in many ways working on an old business model. It was a bricks company with locations that had real estate and addresses. The new movement in media is digital. It is the movement not of atoms, but of bits. It is a movement of information, media, and entertainment over the internet. It'll be interesting to see what happens in terms of new media very quickly turning into old media, but this is a sign that at least one of the biggest names in old media for the last generation is in big trouble. But also big trouble for the television networks, and that includes cable, which since the 1970s has become such an important part of American life. On Friday, CNN announced the firing of Jonathan Klein, the executive who had led the makeover of that cable news network and had served for several years at the helm of the most famous name in American cable news. But now, Mr. Klein is out. And the reason why? Well, it comes down to this. In just the last 12 months, just the last year, CNN has lost fully half of its viewing audience. Half. Rarely, in terms of media and entertainment, is there a shift of that kind of magnitude. But this is another symbol of just how fast the media world is changing. And, well, the survivors are those who are changing with it. Also out is Jeff Zucker as the chief executive of NBC, a man who had spent his entire career working for only one company and had worked his way up from being a minor writer all the way to being the head of the network, is out because NBC is also facing trouble. Old media in big struggles. That's really no longer a new story, but it's still a big story when you consider the placement and the centrality of media in American life. Big trouble in Afghanistan. It so happens that Americans had hoped to demonstrate a new sense of equality and justice there in Afghanistan with a big public event. And that public event was to center in a kite giveaway to Afghanistan children. And so the event held in Kabul was with all the good fanfare and the festivities of a huge holiday or public event. The Americans sought to give out copies of the Afghan Constitution, justice-themed comic books, and kites. Now, kites are very central to Afghan culture. Kite-flying competitions are one of the main preoccupations of the children and youth of that culture, as made famous in the recent novel, The Kite Runner. But what actually took place in Kabul was not what the organizers intended. What happened was, even as the United States Agency for International Development was there to pass out the kites, the comic books, and the copies of the Constitution to children, the vast majority of the kites were actually gathered up by members of the Afghanistan police, who appeared to take them, more or less, in terms of a breakdown of total order. Nation building is not easy. Rebuilding a culture is extremely difficult, perhaps never pictured so graphically as when the police steal kites from children in a mass demonstration organized by the American government to demonstrate a new sense of justice and equality in that country. We've got big work to do and very little time in which to do it. From time to time, events take place that become symbols of what's wrong with the culture. One of those took place on Friday when entertainer Stephen Colbert appeared before a House subcommittee to give testimony about immigration. Now, as many of the major newspapers and media outlets in this country reported, Colbert took the opportunity to use his genius for humor in order to capture the attention of those in Congress and watching on television and beyond. All of this is something of an extension of his own Comedy Central program. But what made this particularly sad, very lamentable from the standpoint of responsible politics and civic order, is that in this case, Stephen Colbert was brought in as an entertainer to speak to a very important issue of national deliberation. He made fun of it from the beginning. Instead of taking an oath to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, Mr. Colbert said that he would speak nothing but truthiness, the word he is now famous or infamous for having coined, meaning something approximately true, but not necessarily true. Truthiness is not the same thing as truthfulness. Now, at the very end of his comments, Mr. Colbert broke character and actually spoke very briefly in serious terms about his concern for immigration, but we should note it's a topic in which he has absolutely no expertise. Now, if you reviewed major media over the weekend, you saw a great deal of consternation and controversy about Mr. Colbert's appearance. Some members of Congress themselves, including leading Democrats, said that it was absolutely irresponsible to have Mr. Colbert to appear. Now, Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart, both famous comedians who have entertainment programs that are disguised as and even now functioning as news programs, plan to hold big public events in Washington, D.C. as competitor events or answers to the big event on the Mall held by Fox News commentator Glenn Beck. Now, who knows exactly how many people will turn out for those events? But what we do know is that an increasing number of Americans, and in particular younger Americans, are not only getting their entertainment from people such as Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert, they're getting their news. And what we have here is a breakdown of the ability to discern the difference between being entertained and being informed. Comedy can do many things, and as a matter of fact, comedy is one of humanity's main and most effective means of communication. Comedy can catch us unawares. Comedy can demonstrate irony. Comedy can be used to caricature or to portray a parody. But what comedy does not do well is provide a stable platform for public discourse about the important issues that, at their very core, are not funny. Making fun of an issue is not the same thing as deliberating an issue. The other thing that we should note, just in terms of the political spectrum, is that both Mr. Colbert, whose comedy is centered in his attempt to play a caricature of a conservative, both Mr. Colbert and Mr. Stewart come from the political left. As a matter of fact, many observers think that Jon Stewart may be one of the most effective voices for liberal political and moral opinion in America. You put all this together, Rolling Stone cover story about Jon Stewart, this past week's New York Magazine cover story about Jon Stewart, and Stephen Colbert testifying in Congress, and it looks like we really are a people confused about reality, the true, the false, the real, the artificial, and the important. But a breakdown in social order in Afghanistan is one thing. A breakdown in an order of understanding and priority and sanity in Congress is another. But a breakdown of discipline and morality in the church, a breakdown of accountability in Christ's body, that's a very different thing. Of course, there's been a great deal of controversy in recent days over the allegations that Atlanta pastor Bishop Eddie Long was involved in an illicit sexual affair, indeed a homosexual relationship, with four young men. Now, this is not just gossip. This is now a matter of legal action, or we would not be talking about it. The legal action came as these four young men have filed lawsuits against Bishop Long, and these lawsuits are now a matter, of course, of public record and the public courts. I have no knowledge whatsoever about the truthfulness of these claims. What I do know is that what Tom Breen writes about for the Associated Press is profoundly true, and at this point, the main point. Mr. Breen points out that in all too many churches, especially these independent megachurches, there is absolutely no substantial accountability. There is no one who can tell a pastor no. Many of these churches, whether Pentecostal and charismatic or just large and independent, lack the kind of accountability that comes through denominations and larger church structures. Regardless of polity, being involved in a denomination brings some accountability. There's a huge difference between a church that is, for instance, allied with the Assemblies of God and one that is just an independent charismatic congregation. In the first case, there can be an action taken against a pastor for discipline by someone outside the congregation. In the second case, there really cannot. The reality is that in all too many of these megachurches, the congregation is itself the only entity that can take any action whatsoever. But these congregations are largely built by charismatic pastors who are resistant by the very force of their personality to this kind of correction. Eddie Long went 20 years ago to the church, the New Birth Baptist, Missionary Baptist Church in Atlanta. He took it from 150 in attendance to 25,000. It's a powerhouse with a $50 million cathedral, a roster of parishioners that includes athletes, entertainers, and politicians. All this according to Tom Breen for the Associated Press. Now, what we have in the case of Bishop Eddie Long is a controversy that is going to wind its way through the courts. Eventually, we'll know more about this, and a watching nation is going to see the scandal once again of a pastor and, by extension, the gospel of Jesus Christ sullied by this kind of scandal. But you have to wonder if churches have any kind of ability to answer a wake-up call. In the aftermath of the scandal concerning Ted Haggard and so many others, how is it that so many churches still have no substantial instruments of accountability? That's a question that is seed for only further scandal. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. You'll find a wealth of resources at my website at albertmohler.com. Follow me on Twitter by going to twitter.com/Albert Mohler. You'll also find a great deal about the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary by going to sbts.edu. There are so many events and observances on campus that are broadcast and available to you on both video and audio. For instance, chapel messages are recorded so that if you cannot attend a chapel on any given day on our campus, you can watch it in just a matter of a few hours, live and free, at our website at sbts.edu. For all this and more, just go to the section marked Resources, or just go to the homepage at sbts.edu, and you'll find the most recent items available for you there. Thanks again for listening to The Briefing. I'll meet you again tomorrow.